This is Guardian Radio, your station for up-to-the-minute news, intelligent, interactive, and engaging conversation. 96.9 FM. The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network.
And good morning, ladies and gentlemen, and sorry for the late start, and welcome to Guardian Radio AM. I am your host, C.A. Nuri, and today we will continue to hash out last week's conversation, which centered mostly around crime and the government's response to it. About 2 weeks ago, after hosting a conclave with various stakeholders to deal with the apparent spike in crime, the government, as part of their crime-fighting strategy, decided to put police in schools. This initiative was met with mixed reviews. However, because of the urgency of the situation and because the situation was dubbed as being a crisis and knowing that government plans to embrace a number of other types of initiative, people basically welcomed it and say, hey, let's try the police, right? So this week, the crime spiked yet again, right? Every flipping day, there was a murder. And apparently, according to the leaders of the police force, all of these murders were connected in some type of way. I remember reading once that they said that it was all gang-related, right? From their specialty, right? So again, I decided to bring my relative, who is a specialist. He's an international, basically a regional specialist on crime strategies, on business continuity. I always pronounce the word. Continuity. And basically creating security strategies on what private entities, what civilians, and what businesses should do in order to avoid and overcome crime. So I'm going to use him as my soundboard today as I try to understand this turf war, as I try to understand the government's response, as I try to understand what we as the community need to be doing, right? And I'm going to see and indicate Ali to see if he got my first voice note to play. Did you get it? No, you didn't get it? So look at your phone to see if you did get it. But I'll continue. My first clip. If I'm looking at Ali to see if he did get it. Nod. Play it as soon as you get it. My first clip is about Bahamian ninjas. There are black ninjas who are able to scale walls, who are able to go through glass, right? And we need to understand how does this impact us. So play that first clip and so we can hear about these Bahamian ninjas.
The Deputy Commissioner of Police releasing a few details about that break-in, as he says, while the video did go viral this morning, the incident was not a recent one.
It's a break-in report, and that matter would have happened a few weeks back. It was a break-in at that time.
While the incident was never reported in the Royal Bahamas Police Force's daily crime report, our news understands the first break-in at the branch occurred in December, while the latest break-in occurred just last month. Both incidents were caught on the bank's security cameras, and the footage has since gone viral. In the March 2022 recording, two men could be seen using a ladder to gain access to the Eastern New Providence Bank branch. In another video from the December break-in, two masked men are seen entering the bank from the front of the building using not the front door, but a decorative glass wall. And in a third video, the men could be seen using high-powered tools to try to gain access to a safe.
Nobody is in custody. As you can see the video, everybody is masked up, gloves up, and we continue to probe that to see if we can identify who the individuals are.
Given the fact that police are no closer to identifying the suspects, Deputy Commissioner Fernander says they need the public's help.
If anybody with any information, I'd be appealing to members of the public with any information to please reach out to us.
This is what I want to talk about. And I want to hash it up before I bring in my guest, Gamal Nuri, and who is the CEO of Preventative Measures, right? I want you to picture this. This, according to the report, this is the second time this bank on Prince Charles was robbed, burglarized. This is the second time that they were infiltrated and got access to the bank, right? And in the video that is circulating now, first of all, I have no idea how this video has been made public. I'm very much concerned about this because this happened months ago. So for months, no one knew about this. And all of a sudden, out of the blue, a video, which is basically evidence, which is being kept secret for a reason, for either for the bank insurance policy or for policing strategy, has been leaked to the public. It's now circulating. And everyone now seeing what is happening with evidence. But for months now, the police did not report that banks are being targeted, that banks have been infiltrated, and banks have been in the Bahamas have been robbed, right? And we see two masked men, and I'm not sure if anyone understood what I meant by ninjas, two masked men who are dressed in black, face covered, who are able to scale these walls at some of the most secured institutions, what has 1, 2, 3, 4 lines of defense, and we're able to get inside and able to get to, it looked like that's the ABM machine, the automatic teller machine, right? And use high-powered tools. And I see on the video that is circulating, I'm not sure who's doing the commentary, but I assume it's the police, saying that, wow, where did they get these high-powered tools from? If we find the tools, see how they're leaking information? If we find the tools, we find these guys. And I said, how did they manage to say that on this tape with circulating? Surely something is wrong with that, right? And I this is where I bring my specialist now, who his job, his business basically is securing buildings, and his business is creating strategies on to not so these things not happen, and to happen twice to the same bank. You know, I'm kind of concerned. Where was the police? Where was the security officers? How can this happen? You can rob me once in a while. I said, you can't rob me once, you know? But anyway, I introduce to you Gamal Nuri. Mr. Nuri, I want to just give up. And I don't want to speak on your job per se, because I want you to basically be a soundboard on terms of strategies on which business can adopt, right, to avoid such. Give comment. Sure, how did that happen?
Sure. Really, I can't speak to how that particular incident or any incident happens, right? But you hit the nail on the head in regards to, multi-layered or multifaceted approach to securing any facility. And when a business is looking at a security prevention or a crime prevention program, it can't be a one-up. It can't be just a security guard. It can't just be surveillance. It can't just be an employee background checks. And I'm naming these different layers because all of these play a role in how you secure your business. Because you may be fighting or thinking you're preventing the enemy from without, where the enemy may be within. So you have to develop your strategy, constantly review your strategy. There's something called crime prevention through environmental design. Is your building designed to facilitate, at the same time as you design a building, to facilitate easy access to customers, easy visibility from the street, you may be also softening your target to allow attackers to also penetrate into your structure. So you have to. It's a very delicate balance in creating a comprehensive crime prevention or burglary prevention, depending on what your market is. And so there are different layers, and these layers are one. Initially designed to develop a delay mechanism, or certainly a deterrent mechanism in the first place, and then a delay mechanism, and then a detection mechanism. So all of these different mechanisms come into play. So can I walk straight into your building? No. Maybe there's a gate. Maybe there is distance between the building and the street. Then there is the doorway. There's access control systems. Then after hours, you may implement an alarm system, surveillance systems, and a patrol system. You have a good relationship with the police. So all of these different things are in place. And it could be where one fails, which now creates an open window or more time for the individuals to get in. Now, bear in mind, the intent of it, the system is not to stop the attack per se. It is to delay the attack. So the stop gap has to be as wide as possible. But somebody's got to get into your building or to get into your property, they may have to cut your fence. So that's a loss. Okay? To get in, they may have to break through the door or cut through a window or cut through the roof. Those things are lost. And then they have to get into the actual space, which depending on what the asset is being protected, you may have another strong room or what you call a hardened room or a safe room, which has been hardened again. So again, to create delays. So at the end of the day, the question is, how successful was it, right? For the business.
It seemed very successful for the criminals.
Well. The question would be for if we're looking at that particular instance, did they get access to what they wanted, or were they just malicious? Then it's very difficult to manage that. Did they get access to the funds that were targeted? And that's the success.
And that's a great question, though, because I do not know, because it was not reported, and I didn't seem as if media asked, did they get the funds? I know that, again, this happened a month ago. We know that they got a long ladder. We know that they scaled the walls. We know that they cut into the bank. They know that they got access into the bank. And then you see the video of them in front of an ABM machine, and they have some kind of high-powered drill device, right, to get access. So for me, especially the police didn't caught them. To me, that's success.
No, then I would have to interject then. If they were construction workers or were they demolition workers, they were not. They were burglars. They went in there to get cash. Did they get the cash? I don't know. You don't know. We don't know. But if they did not, then it was not successful, because the intent was not to go in there and to cause damage to that particular infrastructure. Those mechanisms are in place, and they are, how should I put, the avenue for loss for those particular mechanisms, that's what they're there for. They're there to be targeted. They will be targeted. They will be destroyed. But are you protecting the critical asset? I'll use another, maybe not exactly a building, but if you're doing VIP protection, if you're doing bodyguard service, right? If you get shoot and your principal didn't get shoot, then it was successful. Your task, because you were supposed to put yourself in that stop gap to ensure that the asset is not attacked. So we see this damage, we see this apparent free reign. But did they get the asset that they targeted? If not, we don't know, then they were not successful, despite the damage that was caused.
So let's talk strategy, right? I'm assuming that part of the police's strategy was not to release this information immediately, right? And now I'm seeing that Deputy Commissioner is asking the public to help them solve this crime. But I said, perhaps if you'd have told me 2 months ago when the crime had happened, I could have said, because I live next door, down the road from this Prince Charles. All right?
You
coincidentally, you know? I could have been driving.
That's interesting. I need to update.
Well, I don't have no high-powered tools. I can barely use a hammer. And I'm afraid of heights.
Okay, well,
these ninjas scale the whole building. It can't be me, right? So I could have said, yes, when I was driving home, perhaps, I did saw a car. I thought he was doing maintenance. Right? So I didn't think anything was suspicious. So, but the police held this information from the public until somebody released it. Right? And now they're asking for help. But it's been months now.
Now bear in mind, there are several things. First of all, I can't speak to police strategy, right? I don't know what the strategy is in this particular instance. What was the thinking? What is the thinking? Right? I can't speak to that. But however, don't forget now, you have a private group. You have a private entity who has a say in how that is managed, how that information is managed. It is private to them. So we also have to look at the business involved, because if I get robbed, I may not want my name to be put out there. And I'm talking about me, Gamal, as the individual, right? And, oh, the public has a right to know. Perhaps, maybe, but it's still my personal information. It's still my private information. Does the public have a right to know what's going on in me? maybe there's a robbery, there's a burglary, another person was robbed, but to say identify the individual who was robbed, where they live, no. So, and I say that to say that you, that can happen if I decide that I want the public to know that, hey, I was robbed while I was in Carmichael, or I was robbed while I was in Cable Beach or in Fox Hill, as the case may be. But I still have a right to manage how that is released, because it's still a relationship or an initial relationship between myself and law enforcement. So the public, if it was a crime, how should I put it? I guess more an indictable offense. If it was a crime on the streets, different application, different because it's in the public view. But that was a private establishment. So they do have a say on how that's released and how that's communicated to the public. And that's one perspective. Again, we can't really, and I don't want to speculate on what the strategy was for not releasing it to the press, but I'm saying don't forget the private entity, just like a private individual, has a right to determine, has a right to say, hey, yeah, I was robbed, and you could report another robbery, but you don't need to say my business.
I understand.
I don't want you to say my name. So it's the same concept.
And I accept that, right? I accept that. So it begs me to my next question. Who released this? See, because you're suggesting or hinting that perhaps the institution didn't want their name out there for security reasons, and I understand that. But I'm seeing a number of what I would describe as secured information, which can only be the police, right? I saw one video where the police was searching a gentleman who happened to have a gun on him, right? And in this video, you hear the police, because he has gloves on, you hear the police asking him questions and then searching his nether region. And upon searching his nether region, and he have the camera on him.
What is nether? Nether. For
this video showed the gentleman's pallywhacker.
Okay.
It showed the gentleman's pallywhacker, and I've said, surely this is some breach. I mean, this information could be used for the court. But how did it become into public consumption? And before I even comment to that, some weeks ago, I saw a video again, and I assume it's police again. And they were having some type of conference on gang strategy. And they showed every gang member's face, or who they claim were gang members. They give the date of birth, where they live, you know, and give pertinent information on their crime strategy. And I say, who is releasing these things, man? Is this another of the police strategy, or this is something untoward?
Certainly, there would appear, and this is not new, there would appear that there is some information privacy and data protection controls that are lacking. And it's not just with the police force, but a number of agencies out there. We see where documents are released. We see where voice recordings are released. We see where videos are released. It's not new to us. We eat it up because it's good gossip. It's good, right?
It's good for forward.
Yeah, right, exactly. So this is this. Phenomenon that is occurring with the police, definitely I would think that the police hierarchy is looking into this, and not just this incident, because there have been other incidents as well. So they can put a stronger stopgap or controls on how information is released.
So you don't think this is purposely done by the Commission of Police?
Which, what was purposely
all done? Of these leaks of these videos
you just
of
said leaks, if you say
I
leaks.
I think there are leaks, because I don't believe
you're
anyone
saying
would
leaks.
Purposely.
If you're saying these, and I don't think in the format that this information, we are seeing information coming out, where it's not through an official press statement or official press release, if you're getting videos via your WhatsApp, right, or videos via whatever social media mechanisms, and there's no, I guess, descriptive that goes along with it, that asks, hey, we want you to look at this video, and do you recognize this person? For example, the police from time to time put out wanted posters, which is clearly indicating that,
yes,
John Brown,
yes,
is suspected of this particular offense. We need your help.
Criminal libel.
Exactly. So that's an official release, and that's asking for, and it's giving you specifics on the individual and asking for your help.
Yes.
When you just see random videos spitting out, and especially with the commentary that we would have heard in the most recent release, mm-hmm, right? Then it begs to question, is this official? I don't think it's official in that format. Okay, I think that with release of data, whether it's imagery, whether it's information, printed information, there would be some sort of descriptive advising of why we're doing this and asking you, the citizen, the public, to, hey, call this particular number if you have information that could lead to this particular arrest. or you have information about that time of the week, that time of the day, if you lived in a particular community. For example, you know how you live next door, maybe you would have seen a car, maybe you would have seen. Maybe, I'm just saying maybe.
But I'm nearsighted, so I don't tend to see
I'm
that.
Just saying maybe.
No, and right? At night. No.
But this is important. This is an important vein that we're going on as well. The public has to appreciate, and I think it's very, in many instances, it's delusional, the role that they're playing in this crime prevention or crime war. You're going to say to me that there are, and I'm going off on my little pedestal right now, right? My soapbox, right?
Go ahead.
There are guys moving around with firearms.
Yes.
There are people robbing, okay? You're telling me that no one knows about what's happening? Nobody sees anything? No, I find it very hard to believe that in this society where we have information that is leaked, mm-hmm. that no one is saying anything about crime and their criminal friend or their criminal, and I mean, I'm going to say criminal, but who they suspect may be criminal. Their good son, their good cousin, their good husband, nobody is saying anything. This is an indictment on the society. We have to be careful as we throw rocks
society?
At the police. As we throw rocks at the police and as we throw rocks at the government, don't forget that the police and the government are only representation of you, the citizen. You know that you have a cousin who is thief. Not this cousin, because, you know, not this cousin here. Not my good cousin,
yeah,
right?
Go ahead.
But you know you have a family member, a cousin, a friend who does something untoward. The question I ask is, why aren't you saying anything? And it suggests maybe you are benefiting from that.
But I believe the society is frustrated. Imagine, let me set up a scenario.
Sure.
Imagine in the inner city where they have these CCTVs all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
I'm talking about Camp Road,
yeah.
Right? Six people are murdered, or I can change the word, or homicide, because you know they get antsy when you use the word murder.
The definition.
Yes, right? At a red light, at a traffic stop, at a junction, where it has CCTV, and to this day, I haven't seen any leaked video of possible cars or possible persons hovering, shooting or anything. I mean, when you don't see that information is forthcoming, you start wondering, why should I risk myself and give information to the police when the police is not even giving me information?
Well, the police are giving you information, and perhaps in
did
that...
Did you see any video about the six...
Perhaps.
I didn't see no video.
No, perhaps in that instance, that has been protected. There are reasons for that. But I wouldn't say that the police are not giving you information. The police can only... Don't forget now, again, the police can only give you information based on what they got. So if they're not getting anything, what is there for, to give back, to get a return? So it's like an investment. So I invest, I take a risk as a citizen, mm-hmm. right? That's my responsibility. Now, my risk has to be measured because I have family, I have friends. So there are things like Crime Stoppers, for example, the crime hotline, mm-hmm. where you can call in and give anonymous tips, and it's successful.
Yes.
However, if you're not saying anything, if information is not being communicated, then what can the police give you? So I want us to be balanced in this discussion that, yes, there are some challenges with the policing strategy. There appears to be challenges with the information control mechanism that is within the police. But at the same time, we must not negate our responsibility. And I think, you know, when I hear government and police come out and they give this chime, they always come back, hey, you have a role to play too. Because mm-hmm. it isn't like the police are pulling this stuff out of the air. It's not magic. It's dependent upon you as the citizen to be a contributor to making sure that crime is reduced.
In your professional capacity, I'm not sure, I mean, I'm sure you're sure, so let me just ask the question. Do you believe citizens have a right to bear arms? Because I bring that situation up, right? Because recently a gentleman went to cut his hair and someone followed him, and the camera showing this, followed him in the barber shop and shot him dead. And I'm saying, surely, if he had access to his own gun after going through whatever scrutiny, surely he should be able to protect himself. Is there even any organization in the Bahamas that has could lobby? Because I know the only commissioner could give permission to have a gun.
Right. So definitely there is a recently formed organization. And I say recent in the sense the aggressive approach to, you know, informing and educating persons about the use of firearms, and that's the National Firearms Association, which, just by chance, you know, I happen to be an active member of that association. And the intent...
You know how to use a gun?
I know how to use a gun?
Yeah.
A firearm, because the gun sounds so
I got
wrong.
Scared now. Okay, firearm.
Well, certainly one should be trained. One should be educated on the ramifications and the liability that's involved. And the National Firearms Association is certainly an excellent vehicle to find out more about the use of firearms, how to properly maintain your firearm, the enforcement. So if you're asking me, should Bahamians have a right to bear arms for defense, not just for hunting? Mm-hmm. Because the question is a very loaded question.
Yes.
Right?
Because I have one which says shoot birds.
Exactly. So certainly
come in my yard.
Certainly, you know, if you're hunting birds in your yard, that's a different connotation. But yes, I think that we should have a right or more opportunity to defend ourselves at different tiers. And I say that because, you know, I also teach self-defense. I teach personal protection. I teach hand-to-hand. But at the same time, there is in this society, there may be a need to escalate. So should I have that option available to me? Of course I should have that option available to me. Do you require me to go through some additional protocols, training, validation? By all means. But don't deny that right to me as a citizen. And I'm saying right if it's even a right, because, you know, we don't want to think you American, you know, right to bear arms, because that isn't such a fundamental right here in the Bahamas, or that it isn't spelled out as clearly. But certainly I should be able to acquire the most extreme level of defense to defend me, my family. Well, if it's a shotgun, whether it's a firearm, a handgun, I should be able to have access. And certainly there is, but the rationale that is being used, of course, is that it's exclusively for hunting. I mean, you're in a sense, you're telling the citizen to go and lie on that application form. Because how many persons who own a firearm have been hunting with that firearm? Worst case scenario, they get that deadly weapon. They get that deadly weapon, and there's no mechanism to train, to credentialize that particular person. I'm saying there's no mechanism, but certainly now there is. The National Firearms Association, and we can look. You can look us up on Facebook. You can look us up on our website, and certainly find out more opportunities about training, about what the association is all about, and become a more assertive voice in ensuring that Bahamians have that right to defend themselves.
Okay, before I go to the caller, do you personally believe in the government, the police force, buying back weapons? These AK-47s, surely if there's a way to get them off the street, I'm prepared to pay someone $10,000 if they could turn in an AK-47. What do you say about that?
Utter nonsense.
Don't buy them back.
Utter nonsense.
Let them be on the street.
No. Buying back suggests that I got this thing legally, right?
But he's helping us.
No, but how is that helping? How is that helping society?
One less gun.
And you're not stopping how the guns are coming in. If I bought that gun legally and I wanted to return it to the buyer, to the initial seller, sure, right? But I don't believe in this gun amnesty and this buyback. I do not believe in it. I'm sorry.
You don't believe in gun amnesty?
No, I do not. I believe in, hey, if you have a firearm, right? If you have an illegal firearm, high-powered weapon, for the sake of society, drop that off to the nearest police station, right? And you could say, I found it. Or you could just call the police and say, listen, here's the stash. But to say buy back, you're encouraging nonsense. That's utter foolishness. Utter foolishness.
Okay,
I'm highly against that. Buy back.
Let me go to my first caller. Go ahead, caller. You're on Guardian Radio in the AM. Hello, caller. I can't hear you there, caller. Speak up for me.
Yeah, good morning. How you doing? Can you hear me now?
I can hear you now. Go ahead. Loud.
Okay, good. I'm going to show are you the gentleman Warren had on the show last week?
Not I. Let me ask my cousin.
Maybe you. I know we did have a rep from the National Firearms Association. Are you speaking
exactly.
to that? Yes, I'm not one of those persons who was on that show, but yes, I'm familiar with the group's appearance on the show a few weeks ago.
But that was good. See, what you all need to do? Draft up something. See, because we just draft up something so I can get the secretary. Because right now, I feel as a smart British man and got family and everything, I feel that I should have the right to get me a firearms. You know, I mean, you ain't supposed to go in no cabinet because they get bodyguard protecting them. And like you said a while ago, if that man had his protection in the Bible, he would have been alive right now today. See, all this Moses school, who are these old antiquated laws and ancient, preserving them at 15 years? Because he had 10, that's 25 years, it could have been a lot of things. You see, nothing to change in this country until we get them old willow to read. You see, they swear their allegiance to the queen, her ass, and successor. Not to the many people, not to me, not to you, not your children. My nieces and nephews and my brothers and sisters. See, they didn't get out of the way. Here, there's another thing. We can't go to the casino and gamble. Oh, I can't discriminate in laws. What we need to do, form our non-profitable association and draft them up. And let's try to get over 100,000 secretaries and carry them with the prime minister. And I want them force them to act. You got to put pressure on them.
So let me.
They got all these other groups, but they have all kind of nonsense and all kind of food. Let's do the same thing. I'm trying to take my call, my brother.
Yeah, let me interject that is the case. So the National Firearms Association, which is www.nfa.org.bs, is already established. So we do need more membership so we can become a group that can lobby and push the access for trained individuals to participate or have access to firearms. So the www.nfa.org.bs, and we are there, and we're already established. Our membership is there, and we are preparing, you know, and looking to push recommendations to government to ensure that, you know, access is available for firearms. Better access, that is.
And this is Guardian Radio AM, and you can call me at 323-6232, 325-4316, 325-4259, or even through the text line. We are about to go on a break, and we will continue on the next half of the show.
One thing there is no debate about is that BTC has the best rates. Now, the best rates just got better because you pay half the price of the other guys with your BTC home internet and mobile services combined. Switching to BTC is a no-brainer because I pay less with BTC and get super fast internet with speeds up to 600 megs. The other guys, their internet only go up to 105 megs.
Get all the internet you want at half the price when you bundle your home internet and mobile. Visit a BTC store to make the switch today. Conditions apply.
The new Guardian Radio app is here. Listen live to all our Guardian Radio shows and live video stream select programs in our studio. Get information about Guardian Radio shows and our hosts. Send messages, including text, email, and even call. All from our amazing new Guardian Radio app. Download it free today in your App Store for your Apple device or Play Store for your Android device. The all-new and improved Guardian Radio app.
This is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
This one dedicated to all bad boy. When I think them life I go hand. When I not stop touching murder.
Oh, little boy, by the name of Billy Red. Wake up one early morning with his double motor Remington. Going on a midnight robbery. On a little bit of gasoline, shocking our neighborhood when Billy Boy lost his love. Hang down your head, murderer, sing down your head and cry. Hang down your head, murderer, poor boy, you're gonna die. Murderer.
Bend down your head, murderer. I was speaking, I was listening to Deputy Commissioner Fernanda. And he, in his report, the Prime Minister's report about crime, he said that so far there has been 44 homicides, right? And that the month of March may be a record. There were a total of 22 different homicides. I want to say the word murder because I understand what murder means, right? And it conjures up emotions that I want to respond, right? That word homicide seems so clinical. Right, it seems like I'm detached from it, but I understand that murder is having something that is depicted or concluded by the courts.
Correct. Right? Correct.
And but I want to know what's happening with them. There seems to be a gang war that is transpiring in Nassau, and I am picturing when I was younger, when we used to because we had gangs in our community. We used to fight with rock and bottle. Right, we used to fight with even knives. Right, You might have experienced death, but you're more likely to get injured instead of being killed. Today's gang, right? And they have a whole slew of them. Crack House, Mad Ass. And mind you, I hear about these things on the news because I don't know where they are, right? And they have high-powered rifles. I mentioned the AK-47. This bullet goes through walls. It tears off limbs. You should get shot at your whole arm. It's torn off, right? I'm trying to say, what type of weapons can our police force fight against something like that? And I'm before I have you respond to that, I have a cousin. I have a cousin who is reserve. And I remember me working in a restaurant. I've seen him doing his rounds. He comes to all camouflage up, you know, inside his bus tank. And he has what all I call weapons. But these weapons to me seem small, right? They seem small in contrast to what these gang members are using. And I want to understand what type of device does our police force have. I hear we have something called a shot spotter. I hear about this drone. I never seen the drone. So I would have been happy if every so often I see a drone fly by me. So, oh, that's the police there. They're watching, right? You hear about the CCTV, but I never see any video where or even any evidence that we use CCTV recording to help us solve this. I know that we capture one or two criminals by high-speed chase, but I'm not necessarily sure that the CCTV help with that. But in your line of business, are you familiar with any type of crime equipment that the police can use?
Well, certainly from what I have been exposed to via the media, I think that the police have multiple tools that they have deployed and that they are implementing to help to manage, mitigate crime incidents. The question is how integrated are those systems so that they're working together? They're not seen as one and separate and apart. So if we're using, let's say we're using drone technology, how accessible is that to the officer who is actually on the road doing the patrols? Similarly with CCTV footage or video, how accessible is that to the person actually on the road? Do they have to wait through a tier or a pass-on system where there is perhaps an operator who then relays it to another operator who then relays it to the vehicle on the road, and then that process.
Not every police have a gun?
Excuse me?
Not every police officer have a gun?
No, we're talking about technology, okay. from what I understood, but I'm certain, but saying not officers on the streets who are patrolling, they're armed accordingly to what is needed. And I don't think there is a need to get into what gun, what type of firearm the criminal has versus what type of firearm the police has. Because I think that really, if you understand combat, that's really neither here nor there. The police are armed sufficiently, and they're not dependent upon what the criminal is armed, right? They are armed sufficiently based on what they determine is the need for that particular type of deployment. So from a crowd-controlled situation at, let's say, John Canoe, if anybody remembers John Canoe, by the way, it's been a while. You need to bring John Canoe back, but that's a different conversation, right? So do you want to deploy heavily armed police officers at a John Canoe event? I think not. You know, that requires boots on the ground who are prepared to manage crowds and things of that sort. Versus if we're doing a high-risk patrol or if we're doing a search operation, then certainly you would want to make sure that those officers who are deployed for that particular work type, they're properly armed so they can address whatever potential threat that exists. And I don't think, and you know, it's interesting that you ask that question because in the same token, when the police do use or discharge their firearm, there's an uproar in society, which I don't understand. That is a phenomenon to me, right?
Police don't miss. They don't aim for your arm or something.
They're properly trained on how and when to use their weapon.
But never for the foot. Why don't shoot people at their foot?
Because the rules of engagement determine how that weapon is to be discharged. So this foot and arm thing, I think, again, that's fantasy, too much TV, too much Hollywood type thing. The rules of engagement that the Royal Bahamas Police Force, and again, I'm speaking not as an official member. I'm just speaking as someone who understands law enforcement and policies and procedures dictate how they're going to discharge that weapon. So I don't think that's an issue. I don't think it's overwhelmed. I don't think that the police are being overwhelmed. I think that the problem, of course, is that we don't know, the police don't know when that particular incident is going to occur. But whenever the police do engage individuals, we see where the police have been able to manage themselves successfully.
They end it.
But at the same time, when that is done, the public now cries out and says, too much force, the police are too aggressive. So it's like, wait a minute, you're complaining about crime, the police need to do something. And when they do take an action, it's too aggressive, it's too brutal. I mean, you got to make up your mind on what you want to do. You have to understand what's happening out there, that the police also are people. Their fathers, their mothers, their sisters, their cousins, their uncles, they're probably your neighbor. So their life is out there as well. So they have to ensure that they protect themselves. So let's make sure we have a balance here.
Well, I definitely support the police. If you draw on the police, I say to shoot police and they shoot you down. End it. Don't try.
Okay.
But we have another caller. Caller, you want to add to this conversation today? Caller, are you there? Go ahead, caller.
Hello.
Yeah, you're on air. I can hear you loud and clear. Did we lose him?
Good.
Did we lose him or can we move on? So, go ahead.
Let me interject to it. I just want to go back to the technology. You know, we have to appreciate that they're more than just, you know, the use of firearms. There's technology that the police has deployed. And that need to probably be better integrated so that there is a time that is taken to relay a message to the officer on the ground, that it is reduced. And so that requires an upgrade, in my opinion, because in today's society, the off-the-counter technology allows you to pull up video on your smartphone, off the shelf, meaning I can go to Walmart, mm-hmm. I can order off of Amazon, and I can get technology that allows me to view surveillance. So perhaps more accessibility, because it is available. The surveillance technology is available. The drone systems are available. The spot shot is available. So how accessible, however, is that to the patrolman mm-hmm. on the ground who's actually having to deal with this particular situation? And again, this is, again, just a observation. And certainly something that when you look at the way technology is now, the accessibility to it, because it's available. It's available. You know, I tell folks, you know, when you're talking about you know, tracking your IP address and your footprint, you can do that on a simple Microsoft software. So imagine if it was dedicated software for that particular purpose.
Okay. You know? Is that caller back again, Ali? Caller, can you hear me? Oh, you finally hung up, right?
Yeah.
And I know that you mentioned boots on the ground. And I see we have the last 6 minutes to go, right? I see that the commissioner also made reference that there are, in quotes, short staff, right? That it need at least 400 to 500 more police officers to be more efficient in what they do, right? Especially when they start being an archipelago and need to send people on to be on the family island and the demands that New Providence has, right? And I'm thinking now, coupled with the idea that we need police in schools, coupled with the idea that we need more police on to direct traffic to help with crowd control, coupled with the idea that we have so much activities happening, right? Sporting events, cultural events, right? How important is having a large police force, an efficient police force who is well-trained? Because having the bodies there is one thing, but not having them trained on proper policing, police engagement. I know the last time you were here, you said that policing in the schools definitely should be different than policing the general public.
I think that the need for proper management, the need for proper deployment is certainly something that needs to be reviewed. I have a challenge when you have, you know, the availability, you have a force multiplier of security guard services. And I'm going to go back to that a bit because, oh, what does that have to do with it? But certainly, you know, the police can do it by themselves. And the philosophy in any national law enforcement agency, they can never say no to the challenge. And that's just one of those things that go with it. It's not a private entity when we'll say, well, we're full the capacity. The organization cannot say that we cannot live up to the mandate of protecting the citizens of the Commonwealth of the Bahamas. However, reality says as well that there are certain tasks that can be defrayed to properly trained individuals. There are certain tasks that police officers probably should not be doing if you are counted in the fray as police officers. If I have 100 police officers, is that a true count of operational officers on the ground? And that's a question that needs to be asked by those in authority, by the media. If you're telling me there are 100 police officers, does that mean, me as a citizen listening, does that mean there are 100 police officers actually operating? And my first challenge to that would be, you take 100 officers and you divide that by four, and you realize that during an eight-hour shift, you don't have 100 police officers. You now have 25 police officers. Mm-hmm. So you have to really look at those nuances as to where the officers deployed, how the resources are being used, and for what. And is that true to the calling of what the primary mandate is? Is the primary mandate law enforcement, or is the primary mandate other activities? Whether it be accounting, whether it be mechanics, whether it be carpentry, whether it be musicians. And that's the question. How are your resources? Because we can get a bunch of people. We can get a bunch of people and they can be trained. But if they're not doing what the task is, then we still don't have efficiency. And we have to be careful of that.
Okay. For our last few moments, I want to speak about this lady who had her water cooler, a water heater stolen. She purchased a camera, right? And as her line of defense, right? To record. So she saw the person thieving it, right? But it still got away.
Here's a citizen's responsibility, right?
Go ahead. Yeah.
You watched that video?
Yes.
You sure you watched that video?
No, but
the guys pulled up on the side of the road,
yeah.
Right?
Uh-huh.
And they walked into the yard,
yeah.
Right?
Uh-huh.
And they were able to take that particular asset, right?
Mm-hmm.
Where's the barrier? You have a camera?
Yeah.
Understand the role of a camera. There's security. But there are different reasons that I would use a camera. Is it to collect evidence? And that's what a camera is really doing. It's collecting evidence. Is it a deterrent? Maybe it is. But is it a delay? No, I don't think so. Okay? So when you look at, if I'm going to put my asset, a high-value asset like a water pump, I think it's a water pump,
yeah.
Right?
Okay.
And I'm going to put that in my yard, shouldn't I do a bit more understanding the climate that we're in? Because there are some inherent risk living in the Bahamas,
mm-hmm.
living in New Providence, and you have a water pump. There's some inherent people get thief, and that's a reality.
So before we go, give some suggestions for a common Bahamian citizen on terms of protecting the asset and themselves from this type of illness.
A fence, a dog, a cage or a covering, a protective covering to secure that pump. So I have now delay mechanisms in place. Your park less than 10, 15 feet, 20 feet from the road. Do you know how long it takes to transverse 20 feet? 3 seconds. 3 seconds. That's 20 feet. So if it's going to take, and I have no obstacles in my way, and I'm stealing, it's going to take me maybe a milli of a second to get there. I know the tool that I need because I'm coming prepared. If we've seen in the past videos, these guys are coming prepared.
Yeah.
So you have a responsibility as a citizen. If you're going to put your assets out there, right? Understanding the climate that you're in. This is not a utopia. Crime exists. Stealing occurs. It occurs in the Bahamas. You don't need GCs for that. So what are you going to do to make sure that your assets are better protected? That's the question. Don't just throw it at the police. What are you going to do to make sure that your assets are protected? Don't just throw it at the security and have a blame-ism mentality. You have to take responsibility and do what you need to do.
Good. This has been Guardian Radio in the AM. My name is C.A. Nuri. I was speaking to Gamal Nuri, who is a strategist and continuity.
Business continuity. For preventative measures, eh?
Yes.
And so we develop strategy and tactics to help persons to reduce their crime risk, security risk exposures. And so we're available. You can reach us out on Facebook. We are on LinkedIn, 357-9949.
Free plug there. Anyway, thank you very much, and see you next week, Friday.